here's a couple things I want to, I want you to be thinking about, because as you move forward, you're going to have an opportunity to make some choices, essentially. And as a young lady said, I've had the pleasure of representing Fortune 500 companies like Halliburton and Chesapeake and American Airlines, and I've done infrastructure projects in Latin America, particularly Argentina, Chile, and Mexico. I've also served as bond counsel or municipal finance counsel to just about every major political subdivision in North Texas, including the state, when Governor Richards was the governor back in the day, bless her heart. And also represented the FDIC and the RTC out of Washington during the famous savings and loan crisis back in the 80s. And so I've done infrastructure work in Latin America, and I've done bond work for infrastructure work here in the United States. And given those two components, I decided about a year and a half ago, you know, with the change in the law, Senate Bill 1084, we can now expand our public-private partnerships. And that's a different way of basically financing infrastructure. So I kind of like put the two and two together, and I started working on a white paper. And as a result of doing this white paper, and if you guys want a cure for insomnia, I'll be happy to send it to you. I looked at public-private partnerships throughout the world, and I also basically looked at our current set of state laws and then our municipal ordinances. And I read two books. The first one is Benjamin Barber's books, If Mayors Rule the World. And the other one was Perricana's Second World. And in Perricana's Second World, he says, the American Society of Civil Engineers has given the U.S. a D+ in its infrastructure. The first indicator of a strong country is a strong infrastructure. So I said, I better start writing about that and paying attention. The second book, Benjamin Barber, made it very clear that because you have gridlock in D.C. and because you have gridlock in Austin, that means your mayors of your great cities of the world need to tackle more and more problems that we used to delegate to our federal government in Washington and to our state capital. But because folks like to kick the can down the road, and there's a Ed Toll Washington Post cartoon in the back of my white paper where a little duck and a little thing is, you know, kicking a thing down the road and there's a hole in the bridge, that's basically what our state legislature has done, and that's basically what our federal legislature has done. So becoming mayor of a large city is very, very complex and very, very challenging. And when I looked at that, I said, well, let's take a look at Dallas. What are some of the challenges that we have in Dallas today? You know, you read a lot about DFW doing great and jobs are coming and growth and investment and development. And you know what? That's true. But to the discerning eye, you've got to take some time and peel back the onion. When we talk about the DFW Metroplex, talking about the third, fourth, probably largest economic engine in the country, and it's a very, very robust economy, and a lot of things are happening in the suburbs. But I'm not running to be mayor of the suburbs. I'm running to be mayor of Dallas. I put the D back in Dallas. And so there's been this movement. I came here from Washington, D.C. in the summer of 79. There's been this movement called regionalism. And I sat on this, I sat on the Chambers of Commerce, I sat on the Dallas Museum of Art Board, Children's Medical Center, I chaired United Way, raised $147 million for a capital campaign, and I've also worked at the Smithsonian in Washington, looking at philanthropy and looking at how cities grow and how they develop. And I discovered that, you know, regionalism is good. I have nothing against the suburbs, but not at the expense of Dallas. And over this last decade, what we have witnessed is regional growth at the expense of Dallas. And I don't want to become yet another poster child for regionalism. Now, what does that mean, being a poster child for regionalism? That means you got to take a very good contemporary look at your transportation system, your urban planning system, and your political education system. And let me walk you through the first, transportation. You know, we talked to the young lady when she talked about the Trinity Toll Road. Well, I'm not against toll roads, you know, it's because I'm against toll roads. You know, North Texas has the largest collection of toll roads of any other region in the country today. And what it boils down to is taxation without representation. I don't know if you saw the editorial I drafted in the Dallas Morning News last Tuesday, where I had a five-point plan. I can't help it, I'm still a lawyer. And I'm still former bond counsel to the city. So I can draft and I can read an ordinance. I've drafted my fair share, my 30-year history as a lawyer. And it became very clear to me that in 1998 we had a $246 million bond package for a park and a parkway. And I went to law school at GW. worked in Washington, D.C., so I know what a real parkway looks like. And a 6 to 10 lane limited access towboat in the middle of a park is not a parkway, it's a toll road. But we get confused, maybe confused on purpose. We confuse a toll road with a parkway. When I began to peel back the onion, I discovered, you know, gee whiz, we spent $246 million, and that was 17 years ago, and here we are today in 2015. We got no park, we got no parkway, and guess what? We got no money in the budget for our park. So what the hell happened to our money? What the hell happened to our park? What the hell happened to our parkway? And I challenged the city council. Can you, ladies and gentlemen, explain to us over the last 17 years why we never had a town hall meeting, where we never had a debate, a vote up or down to city council, approving alternative 3C that was submitted to the Army Corps of Engineers, and more important, why didn't we have a referendum with a great degree of specificity so the average Joe Blow, Sally Cuses on the street knows exactly what they're voting up and down on. We never did that in Dallas. What happened is we abdicated our responsibilities to an administrative agency, the North Texas Tollway Authority. They've been clients of mine too, but they're not accountable to us. They're not elected by us. They don't report to us. They're basically an administrative arm of a state Department of Highway Transportation agency. Taxation without representation. Interestingly enough, the Coalition for New Dallas did a survey a couple weeks ago. And this is no labels, 65% of the Democrats in Dallas are against the toll road. 75-some-odd% of the Republicans in Dallas are against the toll road. And the independents are roughly at 79%, closing down at 80%. So talk about no labels and talk about a community issue just not getting traction. So why is the mayor and the business community talking about a toll road, basically? Well, they unveiled the curtain 2 weeks ago. We finally found who were the actual anonymous donors funding the super panel that talked about the Beasley plan, and go figure, architects, engineers, and construction companies. You guys connect the dots, you're smarter than I am, I'll leave you to that. And what that means is this: we have a transportation policy that was embedded in the Eisenhower administration in the 1950s, where right now, today, if you build a highway, all you're gonna do is create the need for what? Another highway. And when you build a highway, what happens? If you look at I-345, that went right down the middle of an African-American neighborhood back in the 50s and split it up. When you build a highway, what it does, it destroys neighborhoods. It basically lessens your density. And when you lessen your density, you lessen your population. And when you lessen your population, guess what? You lessen your tax base. And when you lessen your tax base, that makes it more difficult for you to generate revenues for basic city services like filling a pothole. That's why I stood in a pothole for 4 hours between a liquor store and a tire shop to basically underscore the point of how we've mistreated ourselves as a community. Now we're becoming a glorified bus stop to the suburbs. Now don't get me wrong, I've got a lot of great friends and clients in the suburbs, and that's fine. But our transportation policy basically defines Dallas. Dallas doesn't have beachfront property. Dallas doesn't have the Colorado Rocky Mountains. Dallas is defined by its transportation system. That defines who we are, basically. And what we've been doing this last decade is basically hurting ourselves by pouring more concrete and not thinking about not so much moving cars, but basically moving people. So I am all for connectivity as opposed to a toll road. The second problem, going back to our education and the school district, is of the top 9 cities in the country with a population of more than 1 million, guess who's worst in class in the United States, in that category, with respect to the percentage of children living in poverty today? Dallas is worst in class. 38% of our children live in poverty or below the poverty line in Dallas today, basically. That is a trend that's been going on for 15 years to almost 2 decades now. Here's the second trend. Go back to the Brookings Institute, go Google them, take a look at the economic divide, what we call the inequality index. That measures the delta, the difference between the top 5% earners the bottom 20% earners in the community. Now, they take the top 25 cities of the country every year and they analyze it. Brookings does. Last year, Dallas was number 13 in terms of the economic divide. I'm talking about DFW, the Metroplex, all that wonderful stuff. I'm talking about Dallas. Your zip code is in Dallas. This year, it's number 7. Of the top 10 cities in the country, Dallas has jumped the quickest and the fastest of any top 10 city in the country, moving 6 points or 6 slots into that economic divide index, basically. And why should we worry about that? I'll explain that in a minute. What that means, basically, is that we are becoming a city of haves and have-nots. Then the other interesting graph, chart, is of the top 95 cities in the country, Dallas was number 93 in terms of the delta, the distance, and the cost of transportation for folks that live where they live and folks that have to travel to where their jobs actually are. And what we're really saying here is that we have a fleeting middle class that's moving to the suburbs because we have transportation policies that make it very easy for them to get there and the jobs basically further north. And when you have a fleeing middle class, how does that translate to a public school system? I'm a firm believer that the public school to me is the backbone of any democracy. And just for the record, I'm against charters. Okay? I'm not for anything that detracts or dilutes from public school systems, basically. Every strong public school system has one factor that's very important, and that is a participating middle class. If you don't have a strong middle class participating in the public school system, that's going to hurt that public school system, because everybody knows, and the statistics are there, that if you have strong middle-class folks attending public schools, that helps the lower-income families, and it helps that low-income kiddo. And until you're able to attract the middle class back to Dallas, we're going to have our public school system are going to continue to struggle. I've represented the Dallas Independent School District. I've represented Richardson, going back to, I guess, the 80s. I handled Richardson's desegregation case just within the last year in Judge Rita O'Connor's court. I also handled DISD, desegregation case, in the legendary court of the Honorable Barefoot Sanders about 2003. So I understand what it means to take and provide equal educational opportunities for children that come from low-income homes in a major urban school district. And the only way we can meet that challenge is to convince people like you to do a couple things. And here you go. When you get out, you have a lot of debt, basically, unless you're, you know, got your scholarship and your full ride and all that kind of wonderful stuff. That's great. When you get out, you want to have a meaningful job. And when you get out, it's not going to be a situation of what is it working to live but live to work. It's not like my generation, my parents' generation. It's going to be totally different. Also, the statistics say with respect to millennials, you're going to change how we view transportation in the future. The percentage of folks wanting to drive, the percentage of folks who want to even own a car, is going down. But the percentage of folks at your generation, at your age group, in terms of an urban experience, where you want to walk to work, walk to school, walk to church, walk to restaurants, walk to your recreational activities, is going up. You're going to drive the traditional merchant, builder, developer crazy who's used to building boxes in the suburbs. Because now that merchant builder is going to have to figure out, holy shit, this whole, you, and by the way, you're larger than the baby boomers now. I'm in the baby boomer generation. So you're the largest segment of our population today. So that means you're going to change transportation planning. You're going to change urban planning. You're going to change the entire landscape. So all those skill sets that we had in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, basically build out to the suburbs, ain't going to work. You got to recalibrate, and you got to figure out how you're going to bring millennials, young people, and middle class basically back to Dallas. And for me, the only way to do that is neighborhoods. That's why my main focus was not on the sexy, the Margaret Hunt Hill Bridge or the beautiful toll road and all this other wonderful stuff. Glitzy, what I call branding, skyline type projects. My focus is on the neighborhoods. Why is that? any world-class city is merely a collection of world-class neighborhoods. And any world-class neighborhood has a wonderful local neighborhood school where those kids can walk to school on real sidewalks, or sidewalks that aren't crumbling, not stepping over potholes or drug addicts, not walking past an abandoned warehouse or abandoned building, basically. And they can stay at school and they can work and they can have after-school activities. And they can integrate that school into that community. And that's what we're not doing right now with respect to DISD. So, how do you work this? Okay, it's pretty easy, but a lot of people don't see it this way. Take that neighborhood and go Google Texas Organizing Project, okay? Texas Organizing Project fosters what we call communities and schools. And they're in 26 different campuses at DISD right now, okay? And they have what we call a 24/7 wraparound for that local little neighborhood school. That means nutrition, pre-K, prenatal, after-school programs, making sure that students read at the third grade level. Because if they don't read at the third grade level, they have a higher propensity of not completing, and guess what, dropping out. And do you realize that the folks that build our prisons and the folks that do the forecasting for how many prison beds we're going to look at in the future, you know what a factor they consider? The number of kids not reading at the third grade level. There's a correlation there. So the folks that have to pour concrete and buy beds and build prisons, they're looking at that statistic in the public school system where children are not reading at the third grade level, because they know that means I got a pipeline going. And it ain't to this college, it's to the local prison. That's where that pipeline is basically going to. So you have to strengthen neighborhoods. Okay, well, how do you do it? Well, first and foremost, there's 400 neighborhood associations in Dallas, both large and small. And all agree with me, they don't have a voice in City Hall. That means they need to come together and they have to develop their own 24/7 wraparound program. So you integrate it with the little neighborhood schools 24/7 wraparound program. And then you have to basically bless them and give them the imprimatur and the seal of the City of Dallas. So every single little neighborhood, whether you're in the South, North, East, and West, somehow they get represented as a larger organization. They get some modicum of a voice. And now they're ready to interface with City Hall. The problem, City Hall is not structured to even listen, to even collaborate, or even engage in conversation. By that I mean is this. City Hall is still in silos. Our City Hall goes back to the 1950s, 1960s. Man, I think some of those people were paid not to talk to each other. Okay? Because they're in silos. Our technology, 80s, 90s technology, I mean, I wish we could have a dashboard for real-time decisions with real allocation of resources. Can't have that. So you have to restructure City Hall and the culture at City Hall, where you should really have one division, one major department. That should be the Department of Neighborhoods. That person, he or she, should be like the czar, reported to the city manager. So that everything, water, infrastructure, roads, potholes, power, energy, tree ordinances, whatever affects that neighborhood goes through that department, so it's integrated and it's controlled. Now we're in a position to have a conversation, to have a partnership, and to have a collaboration with your neighborhood associations. Once you get that connectivity, then you can have enlightened philanthropy. Then you can have an enlightened participation of the academy, institutions such as this. And then you can have the participation of the business sector or the private sector, and not leave it up to happenstance folks at Goodwill thinking they're doing the right thing when sometimes you're really hurting the situation. And until we get to that point, we'll be here 4 years from now talking about DISD, talking about poverty, talking about transportation, talking about the Trinity Toll Road, and talking about better neighborhood planning. So that's why I decided to let you run, becoming the mayor of Dallas. I've been blessed. We built our house in Lake Highlands 30 years ago. Our sons are graduated. They went to Notre Dame as well. One's in Austin, one's in Chicago. They're having a great time. They're in their careers, off the payroll. So that's great, you know. So they got jobs, thank God, you know. So it's my time to serve, basically. So I didn't wait around for somebody to give me permission. I didn't wait around to get the anointment or the appointment or the powers that be. I decided this is what I needed to do, and that's what I'm doing. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have, as long as there's no multiple choice or essay afterwards.